A couple of years ago, me and my boyfriend were looking at this budget Airbnb for a weekend in Berlin. It wasn't the nicest place we'd seen, but to us it was just going to be a place to get some sleep in between hours of exploring Berlin. We'd hardly be there, basically, so we figured we'd go for it. When it comes to paying for the rental stuff, there's a problem with my boyfriend's card details, so we decide to use mine. Then there's a problem with my card details too, so we try using PayPal. That doesn't work either, and we can't work out what's going on because we definitely had the money in our accounts. It must have been a problem with Airbnb's payment services or something. But tell that to the owners, who ended up getting really annoyed with us because we'd already basically agreed to rent the place via verbal agreement. By the time we got our bank stuff sorted, turned out it was fraud on both our accounts. They weren't interested in renting to us anymore, so we missed out. Or so we thought. Ages and ages later, my boyfriend sends me a link to an article from a German newspaper telling me to get it up on my iPad so I could use Chrome to translate it. But before I actually used the translate feature, I scrolled through the whole article like, what did he send this to me for? And lo and behold, there's a picture of the Airbnb we wanted to rent. Only then did I translate the text, so it was only after that that I read that two parents and their young baby had died in a carbon monoxide leak that occurred overnight in the bloody Airbnb we were going to stay in. I'm not religious or anything, never have been, but I kinda get what people are talking about now when they mention guardian angels or whatever. If it hadn't have been for that annoying fraud, we'd have rented the flat, and it might have been us that were there when the gas leak happened. I was just absolutely horrified when I read through the story, and I was crying like a baby by the end of it. It said the owner had been arrested over it, that he was going to be charged with some variant of manslaughter or whatever, and rightfully so if you ask me. I still get chills when I think about it though, and obviously we just stick to hotels these days. Not that they're any safer, but it just makes me feel safer, you know? Because when I picture that poor family, who went to bed one night and never woke up again, all because some cowboy landlord was too cheap to service the flat. Ugh, it doesn't bear thinking about. In October of 2017, the 36-year-old Australian Ramesh Januzzi was going through a rather rough time in his life. He had been working as a bricklayer in recent years, but a long drawn-out struggle with illegal substances had resulted in Ramesh's lifestyle and health deteriorating rapidly. Drastic measures were needed, and fast, but to his credit, Ramesh had the presence of mind to understand that he needed to break from his old life entirely. And so, Ramesh downloaded the Airbnb app and started browsing affordable, rentable properties around his home city of Melbourne. Ramesh didn't have a particularly large budget, so when he found a room for rent at a very reasonable price, he leapt at the chance to rent it. To Ramesh, it didn't matter that the place had a couple of less than glowing reviews. He didn't care if the atmosphere wasn't friendly. He didn't care if the plumbing looked dodgy. He just needed somewhere that was away from his old haunts so he wouldn't be tempted to feed his addictions. What exactly happened during Ramesh's first 2 weeks in the property isn't exactly clear, but it seemed that Ramesh's roommates and he didn't exactly see eye to eye. There was no kind of confrontation or animosity between them, but we know for certain that at some point, Ramesh complained to a friend that he didn't like the vibes between himself and his housemates. Yet despite their apparent bad vibes, Ramesh chose to extend his stay in the property, which added an extra $210 Australian to his bill. Yet on his final day at the property, Ramesh was horrified to find that he had no money in his bank account. It was later claimed that this was because his employer had forgotten or neglected to pay him, but regardless of the reason, Ramesh had to face the music and tell the landlord that he didn't have the money to pay him. The landlord, a man named Jason Colton, was no fan of Ramesh. He was apparently extremely suspicious of his demeanor and had long suspected that he would be unable to pay the extra money to stay in the property's spare room. Yet there's no way that Ramesh could possibly have suspected the extreme nature of Jason's reaction. He figured they'd be able to work something out, delay payment by a couple of days until Ramis could get in touch with his employer. But it seems that Jason was not in the mood to discuss the matter like a gentleman, and what should have been a simple discussion turned into a living nightmare for Ramis Januzzi. Just as Ramis was planning on talking to the landlord about his current financial situation, Jordan and the two other young men who lived at the property burst into his room to confront him. They had heard Ramis packing his belongings in the bedroom and assumed he was about to do a runner, as one of them later phrased it, which is why they seemed to be heading him off before he could do so. Ramis apologized profusely before showing Jason a banking app on his phone, illustrating that he didn't have the money he owed. He offered to get in touch with his employer, and that he could probably get the money over to Jason over the days that followed. As he spoke, Jason's features turned from pale pink to deep red, and as he finished talking, his rage erupted in a fiery display of pure wrath. Jason grabbed hold of Ramis by the throat and pushed him up against the wall, choking the young man violently as he tried in vain to free himself. Jason wasn't exactly a giant, but he still towered over the small stature of Ramis, on top of being considerably stronger than him. It was with Ramis being in this completely helpless position that Jason began to pummel him mercilessly, throwing his fists into his face over and over again until his nose and cheekbones were broken. What became clear much later is that Jason simply did not believe that Ramis didn't have his money. The landlord had gotten into his head somehow that Ramis was trying to somehow get one over on him by showing him an empty bank account, when really, he had the money stashed somewhere else. Jason continued to brutally assault Ramis with the help of the two other men that resided at the property, and at some point, the confrontation spilled out into the front yard. The neighbor that had called the police later said that they saw a man limping from the front door of the property, one who was trying to scream, but was unable to do so thanks to being choked by the enraged Jason Colton. Ramis tried all he could to escape, but Jason continually dragged him back onto the lawn, demanding that he check his bank account again to prove he wasn't lying. But when Ramis once again showed him an account with less than 10 Australian dollars in it, instead of calming down and figuring something out, Jason's rage was renewed. Only this time, he wanted not just to physically hurt Ramis, but to humiliate him too. The landlord then took a plastic pencil case from Ramis's belongings, stripped him half naked, then proceeded to shove the pencil case somewhere it really didn't belong. But Jason wasn't done yet. He began choking Ramis, demanding he pay the rent money that was owed, but Ramis was in no state to form a cohesive sentence. Instead of letting go to give him a chance to speak, Jason continued to keep Ramis in a chokehold. Ramis passed out, never to awaken again. With Ramis in the mortuary, Jason was charged with first-degree murder. A neighbor of his later testified that the disturbance was so loud that she could hear it from a few houses away, the distinct sound of a man screaming at the top of his lungs. "It sounded like aggressive male behavior," she told the prosecutor, "and I wasn't going anywhere near that." The prosecution had ample evidence of Jason's guilt, as his police interviews are a disturbing mess of lies and counterclaims until he is confronted with the fact that his victim had actually passed away. At that, Jason stated that Ramis deserved everything he got. But Ramis didn't fight back. He didn't pose a threat to the landlord at any stage. He was mercilessly beaten and choked to death on the front lawn of a small suburban home, all for just a few hundred dollars. The jury saw Jason for what he was, the lowest kind of scum, and convicted him of murder before a judge handed him an 11-year prison sentence. When we use services like Airbnb, we take a great deal of comfort in the flashy website and lose ourselves in the glossy photographs of our potential rentals. We're quick to forget all the company is doing is hooking us up with other regular people, and that pretty much anyone can post an advertisement. How many other people like Jason are out there? How many other violent psychopaths are renting rooms to unwary strangers who turn from tenants to victims at the first provocation? We should definitely all be careful who we interact with on websites like Airbnb, because we might be renting rooms we'll never leave. Okay, so this might sound like a bit of a weird one, because it's not like a spooky story. Our Airbnb wasn't haunted or anything, and I don't believe in stuff like that to begin with. But when me and my girlfriend stayed at an Airbnb in Belgium, something happened that creeped us out so much that we had no choice but to leave the apartment and check into a hotel. I've had a mate of mine tell me I overreacted over this, but just put yourself in my shoes. First proper morning of our little weekend getaway to Bruges. Me and the old ball and chain are getting ready to go out for breakfast when we realize that neither of us had packed any toothpaste. It was one of those I figured you'd do it kind of things. But it was no big drama since we could just brush our teeth and help ourselves to sketchy mints the owners had left for us. But I do remember my girlfriend looking around in the bathroom just in case the owner had left us any and saying some throwaway thing like, "I wish they'd left us some toothpaste." Boring, I know. I'll get to the point. We go after breakfast, have a wander around Bruges, grab some toothpaste, then head back to the Airbnb. That night, I go to take a shower before bed and saw that my girlfriend had picked up the weirdest toothpaste that I've ever come across in my entire life. Honest to God, it looked like something you'd get out of a Second World War ration pack with this eye-watering old-fashioned menthol smell to it. I have my shower, walk back into the bedroom where my girlfriend is half asleep, and I kind of poke fun at her for buying vintage toothpaste. She's knackered and half asleep, like, "What are you on about?" telling me to shut up and go to sleep, etc., etc. I had a wee giggle to myself, then got into bed and tried to get some sleep. It was the weirdest thing, because how did she not realize she picked up such weird old toothpaste? And that's when it hit me. She didn't. She didn't realize because she didn't buy it. Which means someone else bought it and then put it in our room. Which meant that someone was listening to my girlfriend when she was in the bathroom. And it's not like the place was small, and the bathroom was near the front door to the apartment or something. God forgive anyone who wake up my missus in the middle of the night, but I decided the circumstances warranted waking her up. She was annoyed at first, telling me to leave her alone, but once I explained the situation, she just sat up rigid in bed, like completely freaked out. We racked our brains as to how someone might have heard us, but couldn't come up with anything. Like I said, the place wasn't small and the walls were pretty thick. So how had someone heard us? The landlord lived miles away and as far as we knew, no one else had keys. It's something that bothers me to this day, to be honest. But I still can't work out how someone heard us. And I did ask the landlord about it, who told me no one had been in the apartment. We were convinced it was him, though. Enough to just pack our stuff and leave. I know he hadn't exactly brandished a knife at us or anything. What happened would most likely make for a terrible horror movie, but like I said before, put yourself in my shoes. Someone is listening to you when you go to the toilet, and for all you know, they're watching you too. And God knows why they're doing it, but it can't be a good wholesome reason. 1,000 nopes, seriously. Just thinking it over had me and my girlfriend getting out of there. It didn't ruin the trip too much. Like we realized early what was going on, so I think we got off quite lightly. The extra hotel money was the real scary part, though.
This past Christmas was me and my girlfriend's 3-year anniversary. We don't typically do much, so this year we decided to make it special by planning a romantic getaway. At the time, the two of us were living in Wyoming, and we rented a cabin in the snowy mountains for the weekend. We found the cabin on Airbnb with a hot tub, and we were instantly sold. The cabin was in the middle of pretty much nowhere. The nearest other house was a half mile away. To get to it, you had to drive down a small, removed, private road. We got to the cabin, and we both looked at each other, not thinking it was going to be that desolate. But we quickly brushed it off, as the cabin was amazing. We went inside, and there was a booklet with all the cabin's info outlined. The book said that during the snowy season to not be surprised if their contracted snowplowers showed up to clear off the driveway. All right. Well, that was fine, we both thought. We unpacked, and quickly realized there was no service on either of our phones, though the booklet in the cabin told us that there was a landline if we needed anything. We spent the first night by the fire playing board games and drinking wine. It was honestly really nice. The weekend was exactly what we needed. Now, at this point, it was only 6 p.m. We planned to spend the next night in town, and this night, I booked us a reservation for a nice dinner. We were gone for quite a while, not returning till about 10. Dinner was great, and we were excited to head back to the cabin for some champagne and hot tubbing to end off the night. Now, something that should be mentioned is it had been snowing all day. As we were driving back, we both took notice to how much more snow had piled up outside. We drove down the private road and got to the driveway. Though, I stopped the car in front of the house with my headlights shining. My girlfriend looked at me confused. There were clearly fresh tire tracks on the driveway, and I asked her if she saw them too. We both knew this couldn't have been us, as we hadn't even driven on the driveway itself, just the nearby street. Immediately though, we remembered the snowplowers that could have stopped by. But the issue was, we saw the tire tracks because of the snow. And who plows the snow in the pitch black dark? We also knew that once we were at the cabin, we had no cell service on our phones. We both agreed to head back into town and message our Airbnb host, and ask him if one of his friends had stopped by the cabin. We got into town and sent over a text. We proceeded to wait for a reply, but unfortunately, we didn't hear back. We could have called, but at that point it was past 10, and we didn't want to be disrespectful guests. We figured we blew the whole thing out of proportion, and might as well head back to the cabin. We just figured we must have been psyching ourselves out over nothing. We drove back, and this time we actually drove up on the driveway. As we got out of the car, my stomach dropped as I noticed fresh footprints on the property. From what it looked like, someone had drove up on the driveway, parked, and then got out of the car and walked onto the property. Since we had also now driven on the tracks, we couldn't find where the footprints ended. The property was quite large, with tons of trees and bushes. We knew that the footprints could have gone anywhere. We decided to call the police, as the whole situation was too weird. We figured it was better safe than sorry. We would just have the officer go up to the property with us and check everything out. We drove down the road till we got service, called the police, and waited for their arrival. When the policeman showed up, we led him to the footprints. He scanned the property, and even partly in the surrounding woods, but determined there was no one out there, or anywhere near. Obviously, we were a little shaken up, but thanked the officer as he left. Needless to say, neither of us were in the mood to sit in the hot tub in the dark woods after the whole situation. Instead, we locked the doors and watched a movie I had downloaded on my laptop in one of the bedrooms. Though, we were both tired from the whole day and had passed out not too far into the movie. Fast forward to 3 a.m, and I woke up. I remember seeing my laptop had finished the movie with my girlfriend fast asleep right next to me. I shut off the laptop and set it on the nightstand. Though, I was pretty confused as to what woke me up, as I'm a pretty deep sleeper and won't wake up to almost anything. That's when I heard a slight bump on the bedroom window. The curtains were closed, so I couldn't see what produced the sound. I figured it must have been a small clump of snow falling on the window, and proceeded to lay back down to fall back asleep. But not even 10 seconds later, the sound came again. This time a little louder. At that point, I thought it best to get out of bed, pull back the curtains, and see what was making the noise. And so I did. I got up and opened the curtains, but there was nothing. I turned on my flashlight on my phone to get a better look, as honestly all I could see was darkness. I had to open the window so the light wouldn't glare, and right as I did, my light revealed fresh footprints in the snow right under the window. I was instantly put on edge. I proceeded to point my flashlight into the darkness, and I swear I could see a figure just standing there in the snow maybe 10 yards out. The footprints under the window led exactly to where the figure was standing. My heart dropped, but I stayed calm. I closed the window and woke up my girlfriend telling her we had to go. She asked me why, but I didn't tell her, knowing she would freak out. I just said we needed to pack our stuff and leave immediately. Confused, she complied. About 10 minutes after I had seen the man out the window, we both had all of our stuff at the front door and were ready to make a dash for it to the car. And so we did. I opened the door and we dashed outside to the driveway with all of our stuff and got inside. I started the car and was starting to reverse out of the driveway when my girlfriend screamed. I looked to where she was looking in reaction, and there the figure was, right beside the house, now just watching us leave. I booked it out of there, not looking back. Once we got far enough to have cell service, we sent over a text to the Airbnb's host explaining the whole situation. And later that morning, we would get a text back from the guy. He said that he went to the cabin, and there were indeed footprints all around the building. He said the footprints stopped at every window. This freaked us both out, but realistically it was out of our hands now. We never heard back from the guy, so we never ended up knowing if anything ever came of the whole situation. But that figure, and just the whole experience in general, still terrifies me and my girlfriend to this day. I'm 18, and I just recently moved out of my parents' house to go to an out-of-state college in California. Now, my flight flew in a few days before the school dorms actually opened, so me and a few friends thought it would be fun to rent an Airbnb until then. So we did just that. We bought the cheapest one we could find, as we were just broke college kids. On the first day when we arrived, I couldn't help but notice how sketchy the area was. You could easily tell we weren't in the best part of town, but I guess that's what we get for buying the cheapest option. It was the second night, and all my friends went to a nearby house party. Though, I decided not to go, as I had a pretty bad headache and didn't feel like doing much. So I was left home alone. It was around 9 p.m, and I was just coming out of the bathroom when I heard the front gate to the yard swing open. I saw someone run past the porch window and into the backyard. From what I could see, it looked like a deranged guy hunched over wearing all black. In reaction, I ran to the window facing the backyard. I didn't see anyone. Though I never saw the guy return. Which meant he must have been somewhere in my backyard. I stood there looking out the backyard window for a good few seconds when I heard a knock on the front door. I jumped in reaction, but walked over to see a pretty normal looking dude in his 40s. I went right up to the security bars and the guy proceeded to ask me if I'd seen his son. I replied saying,
"Yeah, I think so. I just saw someone go into the backyard."
He responded saying his son ran away and he'd been following him trying to catch up to him. It struck me as weird though, as the first guy didn't look much younger than the second. I thought there was no chance he was this guy's son. The guy walked off towards the backyard before I could question it, though. I waited by the front door for a bit, until I saw both of the guys fidgeting with the door in the back. I went up to ask what they were doing, and they stopped for a second, and just replied with,
"Hey man, my son really has to use the bathroom. Could you unlock this door and let us in?"
The guy stood there staring at me, dead in the eyes, waiting for my response. I told them no, as these guys really gave me an off vibe. And that's when the second guy threw his whole body at the front door in an attempt to break it down. I jumped back in response and ran upstairs to grab my phone to call the police. I stayed up there till they arrived, though the two men were gone when the police arrived. The two officers proceeded to tell me that two other break-ins were reported in that area not even an hour ago. I never knew if they ended up catching the two guys. It's likely that the first guy ran into the backyard to try to find a way in the house, and the second guy went to help him. What disturbs me most is the fact that they didn't want to break in just to rob the place. They weren't even scared off by the fact that someone was home. They clearly wanted me to open the door so that they could get inside and do who knows what.
I'm a male living in South Korea. My cousin, Nari, used to be an Airbnb hostess here in Seoul. The site's become massive. There's something like 2 million properties listed on it, so no matter where you're traveling to in the world, chances are that there's somebody with a room or a condo or even an entire house to rent. During her time hosting, Nari met a whole bunch of colorful characters. There were the sweet older couple that came to stay with her 8 times while visiting friends in the city. There was the guy who insisted on bringing his dog with him, this little rat-sized chihuahua that was about half the size of my cats. There were a few people who were high maintenance, and there were a few who were really chilled, and ended up joining us for drinks at the bar down the street. I never hosted personally, but I'd help Nari out with her bookings if she had to work late and needed someone to meet her guests. Well, for all the good people, there was Mr. Park. He was this creepy, balding guy that stayed with Nari for a week while he was in town on business. At least, he said that was his reason anyway. I think we were both relieved when he left. I'd met him once and didn't like the vibe I got off the guy, and there wasn't much she could do to kick him out early or anything, lest he gave her a bad review and dropped her score on the site. After he left, Nari discovered a weird plastic thing he had left in the shower. Turns out, he had left his slimy, fake vagina masturbation aid sitting next to her soap. I took one look and had to explain to her what it was. I remember her picking it up in a plastic bag, like the way people scoop up dog shit on the street. From then on, Nari was pretty picky when it came to who she let stay. One weekend, Nari had to leave for a business trip, so she left me the spare key. She had a booking coming up, a young woman named Sumi, and I was to play host. We'll just call her Sue from here. Sue checked in, got the key from me, and put her suitcase in the spare room. I didn't see any more of her that Friday, or for the rest of the weekend, and I figured she was out enjoying herself. Not too long after that, I could have sworn I saw Mr. Park in our local grocery store. Same balding head, same vibe, but he was at one end of the aisle, and I the other. I got that feeling like I was being watched, but when I looked directly, he was gone. At the time, I shrugged it off, figured it had to be some other balding guy, and I was just projecting my anxiety. Now, the building I live in is fairly old, which means that the walls are pretty thick, and noise tends to only travel in the hallway. If I'm waiting for the elevator, I can occasionally hear someone's TV if it's really loud, but that's about it. That Monday morning, I was woken up far too early by a pounding sound. It was maybe 6 or 6:30 in the morning, and the sun was barely up. At that point, I was pissed. I threw on a housecoat and yanked open the front door without bothering to look in the peephole. I was greeted by two very tense policemen. They asked for my name, and if I knew the young woman who lived across the hall from me, pointing to Nari's apartment. Without thinking, I ran across the hall and through the open door, just knowing in my gut that Nari was supposed to be returning that morning, and that something must be wrong if there were police at my door. The cops yelled for me to wait, but I was on autopilot. At first, I thought someone had robbed the place. Her TV was smashed, her couch was ripped apart like it had been mauled by a bear. Her photos were buried under broken glass. Her laptop had practically melted into the floor. And then I realized, in some part of my brain, that her TV and laptop wouldn't be here if it was a simple robbery. And that's when I smelled it. Death has a certain stench to it. Sometimes, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, like a hospital corridor, you'll get a whiff of it. What I smelled was a full-on, closed-handed fist slug into the face. In a panic, I couldn't stop myself. I flung open the first bedroom door. Nari's room looked just like the living room, but she wasn't in it. By this time, the officers had caught up with me and were trying to steer me back out of the unit, but I broke free of their grasp and flung open the spare bedroom door. Inside was what was left of Sue. We get so desensitized to violence on TV that when we're actually confronted with it in real life, it seems almost absurd, like it's totally unreal. She had literally been torn to shreds with a knife. Just from smelling the air alone, I could taste that metallic flavor of blood in the back of my mouth. I showered several times a day for the next week and could not get that taste, that smell out of my hair or skin. It turns out that Sue had been there since Friday night. Nari got home a few hours later. By that time, the forensics team had already been in and out and were starting to clean up the scene. I couldn't tell her about what I'd seen. I just remember hugging her. While investigating, the police had found a second set of keys. This meant there was actually a third set of keys to Nari's place, and those keys had prints. Three guesses as to who they traced back to. Mr. Park. Park had made a set of keys while staying at Nari's, and he wasn't here on business as he had claimed. It turns out he lived about 15 minutes outside of the city. Security camera footage showed him coming into the building that Friday night, and him lurking around outside for the past month prior to that, just after his stay. Surprisingly, Park confessed to the murder, said he didn't know that Nari would be out of town, that he hadn't known she had had a guest that weekend. His wife had recently left him and taken the kids with her, and Nari reminded him of a younger version of his wife. Nari and I have both moved buildings since then. I still can't believe that all of this came because of broken trust. By giving a stranger a safe place to stay, by letting him into her home, this person was so twisted that he thought to make a copy of her key. If it had been any other weekend, Nari would have been at home, and what happened to Sue would have happened to her too.